Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with global leaders in the trade show and events business. Our show will bring you face to face with experts who speak about the possibilities and trajectories of this $50 billion industry. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make conversion easy. Welcome to the 10th episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Thank you for listening and your continued feedback. If you have suggestions or you want to listen to a specific guest, please write to me at shubhanjan@pitch.link or message me on LinkedIn, both available in the show notes. I'm excited to introduce our guest today, Tim Groot, founder and CEO of GRIP, the AI-powered end-to-end event platform.
I think pre-pandemic, I think the industry was very focused on the overall experience of events. And you could see that there was a greater emphasis coming on event experience and how could you kind of go beyond the traditional trade show of a buyer-seller dynamic, right? So I think that trend already started before the pandemic. Then what that meant for us is that kind of leading up to the pandemic, we were very focused on matchmaking, event apps, and really kind of the nuts and bolts of kind of event engagement technology to see how we could help facilitate that particular trend.
Tim Groot is the founder and CEO of GRIP, the AI-powered end-to-end event platform built for revenue growth. He graduated with a BBA in International Management from Amsterdam University of Applied Sciences and the Hong Kong Polytechnic University. His passion for events and startups eventually led him to co-found GRIP in 2015. Over the last 8 years, Tim has won multiple awards, led the UFI Digital Innovation Working Group, and built a company of over 70 employees, all focused on helping event organizers deliver world-leading events. Now, on to this insightful episode with Tim Groot. Tim, welcome to the Trade Show Podcast. I'm delighted to have you. And as I mentioned, just as we were speaking, you're the first product CEO to be on the show. So this is going to, this should sound different from the rest of what we have put out till now. So I'm really excited to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and see if I can give a different perspective than the others have done so far.
Absolutely. So before we come to the GRIP story, I mean, I definitely want to do a deep dive into GRIP. What do you see? I mean, you are doing this for 10 years, which means you saw the pre-pandemic evolution of the industry, then you saw the pandemic, and then you are now looking at the post-pandemic. What do you see when you look back and look at the industry, the state of the industry currently?
I think that for me, the most kind of obvious trend that I'm seeing is the trend towards a greater focus on the facilitation of interaction at events. So I think that in the post-pandemic world, people no longer just want to, or less and less so, want to sit in a conference-like setting or an auditorium and listen to keynote speeches all day. They want to be part of the discussion. They want to have group conversations. They want to have, one-to-one conversations. Want to have more interaction, whether that is in a kind of more kind of buyer-supplier setting or more like, in an ecosystem setting. But in general, a stronger kind of focus on how to facilitate and find different ways of kind of providing interaction between people is probably the most obvious and clear trend that I'm seeing.
From the pre-pandemic, when you entered the pandemic, how did it directly start impacting you, and what was really going through your and your executive team's mind during those early days, and what did you do after that?
So the way that I kind of, when I came into the industry in kind of 2015, 2014, I think that there was already a desire to see how technology could contribute to making events better. I think that, pre-pandemic, I think the industry was very focused on the overall experience of events. And you could see that there was a greater emphasis coming on event experience, and how could you kind of go beyond the traditional trade show of a buyer-seller dynamic, right? So I think that trend already started before the pandemic. Then what that meant for us is that kind of leading up to the pandemic, we were very focused on matchmaking, event apps, and really kind of the nuts and bolts of kind of event engagement technology to see how we could help facilitate that particular trend. During the pandemic, like for us as a management team, of course, like I sent an email in the first week when all the trade shows got canceled kind of across Europe in early March 2020. Being like, look, whatever is going to happen, it's going to be a wild ride, right? Like either on the way down or on the way up, like, but it's definitely going to be a wild ride. And it was. So, you know, for us, of course, there was a huge change that happened to our company, switching from in-person to virtual and facilitating that transition for a lot of organizers. And then coming out of the pandemic, I think there was a short period of time, I'd say kind of maybe 6 to 12 months, where organizers really talked about hybrid. And they were convinced that hybrid was going to be the answer. And to be completely honest, I was extremely skeptical of it from the very start. Like as I even said to our team, like we built some kind of dedicated hybrid functionality to make sure that you could do an in-person or virtual event at the same time. And I just had to say, I was like, look, we're building this functionality, right, to facilitate these events, not because I believe in it, but because if we don't do it, our customers will go with a solution to try these hybrid approaches that do facilitate it. And then when they realize it doesn't work, they'll continue using those platforms, but just go back to in person, right? So we kind of had to build a hybrid functionality, not because I believed in it, but because we knew that many customers wanted to try it out, like, to be honest, realized that it was very hard, and then just go back to in person. But they all felt that they had to kind of figure out this bridge. And I think part of it came from the exhibitor saying, yes, I'll sponsor your event, but there won't be as many people. And what if the person doesn't go through? So the organizer needed a convincing answer to that question, right? And the only convincing answer that I think the industry settled on for a period of time was, well, we can always do it virtually. And that created this whole hybrid kind of era. I think we're well out of that now, and I don't think any kind of large-scale kind of conference has a true hybrid interaction component. Maybe some in the corporate space, and maybe some that have like very strong live, like high quality content, right? But then it's more like a broadcast with some live chat, maybe. Because I just think that they are such different modes of operating. Like, you know, like a broadcast is very different than how you experience an in-person event. So that's kind of like how I would describe the last 10 years. And you know, that kind of comes back to my first point. What we are in now is that people spend a lot of time working remotely, having less face-to-face interactions with other professionals. So when they do go to events, and it's why I believe events have a very important role into the future, they want to have that interaction. They want to participate. They want to engage. They want to be amazed. And I think that is a critical part of why something like Informa pays $1.4 billion for Essential, right, to kind of acquire the Money 2020 and Cannes Lions shows. And it is why there is such a drive towards experience-based events. And I think that's where we'll see that kind of continue for the coming years.
I would like to dig into two of the things that you just mentioned before we move on to something else. The first one I want to dig into is why you think hybrid wouldn't work, because, and it's not working. Because at one level, you can imagine that there are many people who would like to be at a given event, but would not be able to make it because of n number of reasons. And they would like to sort of still get some value out of attending this event. So why do you think that piece did not play out?
Well, there's a couple of components, right? So A, there is the AV cost and the kind of setup of kind of actually making an event hybrid, right? Like most venues struggle to have enough Wi-Fi to actually facilitate a great event app experience, you would definitely not be able to stream a video call in a trade show venue at scale, right? So that's kind of one area. So there's just a fundamental connectivity, a fundamental technology gap that we haven't been able to get to yet, which is an interesting trend in itself, right? So like there is one belief that actual social media progression is directly correlated with increase in bandwidth. So, you know, when Google came out, it was fast enough that actually it could give you real-time search results within, you know, a couple of seconds. So that was kind of trend, like step one. Step two was, YouTube kind of rose exactly at when you could start streaming a video of 360 kind of px without any kind of significant lag. And then, you know, Instagram came when you could actually scroll through some photos without any lag. And then Snapchat came when you could send a huge volume of photos. And now TikTok has come when you can actually load a huge amount of video content in real time. And so, you know, we see a trend there. So that means that I think that the only moment where events will become truly hybrid is actually when we enter the era of augmented reality and there is enough bandwidth to be able to kind of have a continuous augmented kind of experience that like requires a hugely new level of connectivity. That's when we'll start seeing hybrid events. So there is a future for hybrid. It's just like, it's like a decade away probably. So that's kind of, I would say, that the first reason of why hybrid failed. And then I think that there is another component, which is the energy level. The energy level of how somebody feels in those different experiences. When I'm in a virtual setting, I break my day up in 30-minute sections. Typically a very stable kind of interaction kind of level, right? Like you're very kind of, when you're working remotely, it's kind of all kind of you're constantly at a kind of medium energy level. Whereas a in-person event experience is much more up and down, right? Like you might be sitting down for a moment, listening to a session. Then next, you're in a coffee area. You're like super intense. Like, oh, you know, this person you're talking to, and it's like very quick and it's very high energy. Then all of a sudden, you're participating in a group discussion. You're standing with five people. This person is interacting with this one, so it's like very intense in the moment. There are lots of like non-verbal cues of like where somebody's looking at, you know, natural language, like how are they positioning? Are they crossing their arms? Are they, you know, how are they standing with their feet? All of these subliminal things that you're noticing, that means that your energy levels and your experience and your interactions are way more up and down in an in-person setting. And so marrying these two levels of interaction, where you have one hand a very high level of non-verbal cues, and on the other side, a virtual interaction that is very stable and to be honest, much less verbal, much more verbal and much less kind of like human, like body language and so forth, is very hard to combine. And so that's another reason that I think hybrid is very hard to pull off. Again, on the interaction side, I think that there is definitely a place for hybrid on the kind of content broadcasting side. Yeah. But I would say that's nothing new that existed beforehand. Yeah. So those are sort of the important trends that I would say.
Sure. So the other thing I want to dig into was when you talk of how do you take, and this is something you mentioned even before, how do you take the trade show beyond a attendee exhibitor interaction to a more experiential format? What does it actually mean?
That's a good question. So, I mean, the thing is that, so you have to, so I think you fundamentally have to take a different view of what an event is. So, Denzel Rankin from AMR and now kind of like always says this line, it's like, you know, events work best in a complex industry, right? Where different people have to talk to each other. When there is much more interaction going in different directions. And so once you actually take a step back and you say, actually, there is not the concept of buyers and sellers. We just have a group of people here. And we have to facilitate different ways for those people to interact with each other. I think that you're coming to more interesting answers than if you kind of very rudimentary start with like, okay, let's split people into buyers and sellers. There's a guy called Peter Gould who runs a company called Big Worldwide, who always talks about the golden rule of three. And so really, in order to have a successful event experience between two people, they need to interact three times. One is a kind of introductory conversation, like maybe like a quick chat at the drinks or the coffee or like some kind of like short interaction. One is a more in-depth conversation. This could be about either of their businesses, both of their businesses, or like some kind of like business-based discussion. And then three is a very important one and often gets forgotten, which is something experience-based. So for like, you know, the events that this guy Peter organizes, kind of worldwide events, they've got a very strong kind of experience component to their events where people go and have an activity together. I was at an event called WPP Stream, which is an unconference the other day. And almost everyone participates in a morning activity such as playing tennis, doing yoga, like doing some kind of sports based or like kayaking, swimming, you name it, like all of these kind of are facilitated by the organizer. And I connected with three very interesting people over a game of tennis, right? So, and then afterwards you have breakfast together and you talk about each other's kind of like businesses and what you do together. So the idea that an industry is very, like B2B relationships and professional relationships are much more multidimensional than I think sometimes people think they are. And I think that fundamentally believing in that and trying to find ways to bring that multidimensional aspect to your event is a good way to go. This can be as easy as having a great like evening program, right? That consists of drinks receptions, maybe even like some party elements, making sure there is very good topic-based lunches and other programs, and generally bringing more experience-based components into your event and different interaction formats can create that higher level of experience beyond just the biodynamic.
Yeah, this is interesting, and at some level, I find whether this serves the organizer or it serves the attendee or the exhibitor. I mean, the point is that, and you'd possibly agree or not, perhaps, that all this talk about intent, right? So if you just step back from events and look at B2B sales and if you look at what is the biggest discussion point today, it is this whole discussion about intent, tracking intent, following up on intent, and so on, right? And nothing expresses intent better than trade shows. Because if you are leaving your work and your office and your family and you are coming to attend an event, that's a great sort of demonstration of intent. And I think it makes perfect sense. Just now what you described makes perfect sense from the experience point of view, and which is the point that you are explaining. How well does it serve the purpose of coming to the event in terms of actually doing business connections, finding vendors, talking to potential partners, and so on? So, I mean, I just would want you to elaborate a bit more on that so that people who are listening to this gets clarity how the experiential part actually dovetails into the business necessities of doing a trade show.
Well, I think that actually I struggle to participate as an exhibitor in any event that is not more experience-based, to be completely honest. So I find the traditional buyer-seller kind of standing at your booth and you know, trying to engage with people and really having to push the activation that way. We've seen as an organization that it's very hard to generate strong ROI from those events.
Okay.
And the main, and if you compare that to, let's say, an IMAX or like a Global Event Tech Summit or like an Indie Expo, which happened last week, and so there was many other events in the events industry and beyond that are much more try and bring in more experience and more community and kind of like multi-layered this kind of interaction between people. You just see that there is way more. Ways to actually capture that intent and be part of the conversation. I'd say the key ways to think about that is that an event offers something unique, as you say, which in my opinion is permission, right? Like, no other place can you just randomly walk up to someone and say, well, what brings you here, right? That's a very weird question. But at an event, all of a sudden, it's very, like, you can do that. You walk up to anyone and you're just like, well, you know, coffee tastes great or not, and you just, like, strike up a conversation, right? Like so the permission barrier, because you've already, as you said, kind of voted with your feet to be present, and now you're looking for a return on time, right? Like, you're looking for a return on the time that you've invested in it. And also, to some extent, you're locked into that in-person experience. I think that if people could, like, you know, teleport themselves away with a click of a button out of an in-person event, I think a lot of people would leave halfway through at some point. But if you can't, because you're there and it's like, you know, a two-hour train journey back or something, or an hour, you kind of probably stick around. You'll see if you strike up another interesting conversation, or see another interesting talk. So you take yourself into a different setting, right? And I think that means that actually there is a latent intent. There is always a latent intent for learning, interest, and having an interesting conversation and learning something new. And it's about how you unlock that. And the most important way that you unlock that is making kind of people feel welcome, and making sure that they've got a good state of mind and a good kind of positive feeling about the event. And from that experience, it becomes much easier to have positive conversations. How does that benefit exhibitors? Is that, well, when people are having a good time, it's much easier to have good conversations. When people aren't having a good time, it's very hard to have good conversations. So, like, I think that there is a general correlation between great experience and great conversations and positive conversations. And it's also the mindset with which you arrive as an individual and as a company, right? Like, are you there? There are so many different ways that people go to events. Like, some people go through an attendee list and literally have a target list. And others just, like, rock up and just kind of see what conversations they get into. Both approaches can have great ROI. They just have very different approaches in terms of the approach that gets taken. I think that there are many ways to do events right, but I think organizers are responsible for creating a great atmosphere and making sure the right people are in the room. And then, you know, that's some of the key things that help exhibitors to capture the latent intent that is present amongst the participants.
Yeah, makes sense. And I am now conflicted because I wanted to shift to your GRIP story, but you popped in that ROI bit into this last bit, and I'm conflicted, and maybe I'll go with that first before we get into the GRIP story.
Sure.
One of the biggest issues that I hear when I talk to folks who are in different parts of the organizers, exhibitors, attendees, is how do you get ROI from participating in a exhibition? So, from financial standpoint, I guess the biggest stake, singular stake, would be the vendor exhibitors. Attendees also invest money, but their individual stake may be lower than that of the exhibitor. What is your sense? I mean, when you talk to fellow organizers, or when you talk to exhibitors, attendees, what do you hear? What is it that people are looking for to say once they go back that I think we got great return on our investment in this trade show?
Well, you first have to define why you are investing, right? So the biggest challenge that traditional trade shows have that sell square meters is that you don't know why people are buying square meters. So a good example is a big cloud computing event that had Google and Microsoft as exhibitors. And so, you know, both were biggest booths and, you know, great. So they're probably here with the same idea, right? They were selling the same stuff. They were selling, you know, their cloud services offering. But it turns out that they had completely different goals. So Microsoft already knows everybody in the market, right? They've got their channels. They've got their, like, resellers. They've got all of that. So they can reach everybody. Every single company probably buys something from Microsoft and, you know, that's all good. At least when you're kind of of a certain size. The challenge that they have is brand perception. I'm talking like 5 years ago, right? Like before kind of the kind of LLM and all their great investment in generative AI. But they were really struggling to define themselves at the cutting edge of technology, right? So people saw them as somebody that was falling behind, that's lagging, you're not innovative, yada, yada, yada. And so their goal from this event was actually mainly brand awareness. They wanted to be seen as a thought leader. So, you know, they have to be on stage. They have to kind of showcase their great new technologies and how they can actually bring innovation into the market and why they are a great innovative partner for forward-thinking companies, right? So that's one objective. Whereas Google's got the completely opposite. Google, well, at least a couple of years ago, is perceived as the cutting edge of innovation, doing the most interesting stuff in the kind of neural network space and is generally the partner of innovative companies. But the problem that it has is it doesn't have the same level of B2B relationships. So what they need is down the funnel meetings with key buyers. So there is a completely different focus, although they might be spending exactly the same of what they're actually looking to get out of a particular event. So if you're focused as both an exhibitor, you have to be clear of why are you participating in this event. Is this a brand awareness exercise? Which first of all, we as a leadership team at GRIP actually decide who gets to go to each event. Like, is it new business? Is it marketing? Is it account management? Is it customer success? Who participates in that event? Because if you're going to an event where you don't have any kind of existing customers and you want new business to kind of like, you know, kind of make a dent in that event, just sending one new business person, if you don't have any brand awareness in that particular market or market segment, might not be very successful. So it might be better to just kind of do a brand awareness exercise and focus on having a really small booth and combining that with a, you know, with a speaking slot, because in that way you can, you know, build your brand awareness ahead of actually converting people into great conversations. To the contrary, if you're going to an event where you already have a lot of customers and you know that there is no people that are in a new business mindset, then why are you sending your new business reps to get new deals, right? Like, instead, send one of your account managers that is focused on growing the relationships that you already have, strengthening those relationships. So, like, I think that a lot goes into what is the ROI before you can focus on what is the return that you're looking for. So yeah, that's, I think, a very important part for exhibitors and then for organizers to understand, because once you've got a very good view of what all the different exhibitors are coming for, why are they investing, then you can actually build dedicated strategies and streams for that.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
And then I was using Tinder, and Tinder was great. Like, you know, like that was like, you know, 10 years ago when Tinder just came out. And I was like, this is really easy. This is like, you know, swipe left and right. Like, everybody can do that. So I was like, oh, wouldn't it be great if it was a Tinder for events? And that, to be honest, was the kind of the first kind of beginning of it. And from there, you know, we scaled that out to be an overall event engagement platform that helps people strengthen business relationships at events. So it started as a very simple idea.
You are listening to a Bizcast Audio Original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode. Fair enough. I think this is time to move to your GRIP story. So let's start at the beginning. Why did you think that you should start a company like GRIP?
Well, the founding story of GRIP is an interesting one. I was working at a mobile app development agency as an intern 10 years ago when I was 21. And I was going to a lot of evening meetups and other sorts of conferences. I was speaking at some, actually, interestingly enough. I wasn't really sure how to meet the right people to help kind of grow this agency I was working for. And then I was using Tinder, and Tinder was great. Like, you know, like that was like, you know, 10 years ago when Tinder just came out. And I was like, this is really easy. This is like, you know, swipe left and right. Like, everybody can do that. So I was like, oh, wouldn't it be great if it was a Tinder for events? And that, to be honest, was the kind of the first kind of beginning of it. And from there, you know, we scaled that out to be an overall event engagement platform that helps people strengthen business relationships at events. So it started as a very simple idea. And then, you know, now, of course, it's a little bigger than that. But I still believe that at the core of great events is bringing people together, because that's what moves markets forward and therefore moves the world forward.
So when you thought of that, I think one big challenge would have been, how would you get attendees to come and actually sign up? Tinder has its own motivation, right? But what did you think would be, and what did actually happen when you launched? How did you get attendees to come and sign up in GRIP? Was it that you first went to an organizer and then they picked up your technology, and then that organizer brought in its own attendees to sign up, like it happens for other mobile app for a conference? Or was it something else?
Yeah, so I think in the very early days, we did toy with just being a general purpose networking app, and then like just growing organically or kind of like, you know, without event organizers, and just like co-working spaces, any type of kind of group setting you could potentially facilitate networking in between, right? And so conceptually, we were definitely thinking in that direction. But the problem that you have is that the level of permission and urgency and desire to meet in a professional setting is not as high as it is on Tinder. So, you know, like, so therefore it required a different approach. And pretty quickly we figured out, like, okay, we need to work with organizers, right? We need to find a way to make sure that actually organizers are interested in working with us. And that meant building out like proper events app functionality, making sure that it was suitable as the primary way for participants to interact. And still, you know, it's an interesting question of how do you get high adoption, which is a discussion in its own. And that has like various kind of driving factors, right? So like, again, like technology is not there. In my opinion, it's not a be all and end all. Like, you know, in the end, you want a great event experience, and you want to provide participants with a great event experience. Technology can help with that, but you got to start with a great event. Otherwise, it's very hard to change that through technology.
How difficult was it to get an organizer to actually talk to you and say, okay, I'll sign up and I'm going to try this new thing that you're building?
I'd say like, well, of course, like it's hard, right? Like when you don't have a brand and, you know, you're kind of trying to figure out how to get in front of people. For me, to be honest, I think there's very different stages to that journey, right? Like when you're very early stage and you're literally just starting out, when it's an idea or a kind of half-baked product, what the most effective way is to just get feedback, right? So like people love giving their perspective on things. So actually starting with just hearing people out and saying, hey, we're doing something in this space and we'd love your feedback, is typically a much better way to start a conversation than saying, hey, we've built this thing, do you want to buy it? Like, so I think in the early stages, it's much more interesting to focus on learning than necessarily on selling, because it's a different type of sale, right? So that's if you're looking for like a B2B kind of relationship based sales process. Whereas if you're saying, well, the need is already there, I am capturing existing demand. So are you creating demand? Which means you have to go with kind of conversation based approach. We're doing something innovative. We have to kind of like educate the market, brand awareness, yada, yada, yada. Or you're saying, well, there is already a lot of demand for this piece of software. I'm just servicing that demand in a different way. In which case, you know, create a super great website and make sure that it's like really enticing of why people should try it out. And you know, then you have to just kind of build the awareness that you've got a better solution that's set up existing demand. So like, are you creating or capturing demand is a very important kind of distinction of kind of the business that you're building. And that changes over time, right? So like your core products might initially be in the business of creating demand. Like when we started, almost no one talked about the concept of matchmaking. It was not a search term, right, that people looked for. We were one of the first to really kind of focus on matchmaking, and generally established that as a product category within Eventech. He went to all the websites of Cvent, Eventbase, Dova, and all the ones that existed back then. No one talked about event matchmaking. And so everyone just had an app, right? Like that was maybe the thing. And so now when you go to a lot of these websites, everybody will have some form of event matchmaking on their website. And like, that, like, to be honest, if you say like, what has been your impact? Like, it's like, well, the fact that now when people come to me and say, well, actually event apps have really improved over the last 5 to 10 years because they now actually help me network and meet interesting people at events. I'm like, well, I help create that. So like, you know, I help move the industry forward, even though people might not be using Grip for their events. Other events or other technology companies maybe thought, oh, you know, we want to make sure that our customers aren't switching to Grip. Let us build some features in this space to make sure that we have something to offer there. So, you know, in general, your force multiplier might be much bigger than just your company because you're enabling other companies to think in a certain way.
Sure, absolutely. Just to go back a bit, when you decided to form the company, were you alone or did you find some co-founders, and did you decide to raise money up front or were you sort of funding it yourself, bootstrapping it? What was the scene like those days?
Yeah, so very early on, we raised some funding in various ways from angel investors and from some corporate investors as well. I didn't have like a co-founder as such, but very early on, like I started working with some great people. And some of them are still at Grip, right? Like we still have people that joined us in 2016. So very shortly after creating the company, most of those are still working with us today. So, and they all kind of continue to grow in the organization and have some of the most important positions in the company. So, you know, I'm not sure, like I would consider them co-founders because I'm not sure what that term actually means. If I'm completely honest, like, you know, you start a company, like you work on it together and, you know, co-founders also leave companies. So like, you know, like, so what's the difference really? So I think, you know, you just have a great group of people and you're trying to make the most of it. So that's, for me, it's more kind of like, how long have you had an impact on a business? It's much more impactful than whether you were there on day one or not. Like, you know, in the end, they've all been there for a very important and critical part of the journey.
Sure. So when in the early days, you were starting to talk about matchmaking and that was your sort of core focus. We are still like 5-7 years away from the AI buzz. What were you doing at that time? Was it any kind of AI or was it sort of algorithm which was decision tree based? How was it working in the beginning?
Yeah, we started working with deep neural networks and as part of our matchmaking engine in 2016. So like, you know, we actually, like, I don't know if people remember, we had a chatbot wave, I think that was kind of like towards the end of 2016 or kind of like mid to late 2016 when Facebook bought a company in that space and some other things happened. That's when we were already working on AI. So, which was a different time, right? Like that was much more focused on deep neural networks. And now we're much more looking at like large language models, of course. So, you know, everybody's like, oh, this was the first time people talked about AI. But like, you know, I'm curious how many AI waves I'll experience in my life. But I think there will be quite a couple. And I don't think that LLMs will be the last. So, So we started working on that then. And, you know, to be honest, we focus our messaging a little bit less on the AI component now because everything, to be honest, has an AI component. So like AI is not really that much of a differentiating factor. I think that intelligence in general is, like, whether it's artificial or not, so like, you know, to be able to really facilitate new ways of getting people to think about their business, right? So, you know, there is like a general enhancements that are possible on how we use technology now that like LLMs have come up. We group it as AI, but really, you know, there's so much more underneath it, what type of AI that really is. So I think it is really, really interesting. And there is going to be a huge amount of change that is coming to the industry, not necessarily maybe, first of all, to the participant experience, but maybe more for businesses internally, like organizers internally, tech companies internally. AI is having a huge amount of impact on that already.
Yeah, that gives us a segue to talk about AI a bit more. Where do you see, I mean, what when I talk to people, just my experience is that most of what I hear and see is some form of wrappers being created around Claude or ChatGPT or whatever, and that being sort of plugged into whatever product is there, mostly in the form of copilots and so on. Where do you think the real impact of AI is going to come from when you're talking of event tech?
To me, like the co-pilot space is actually a very important space, right? Like organizers deal with a huge amount of customer service inquiries and a huge amount of, like organizers really are very operationally heavy businesses. Through outsourcing, like whether it's with like different agencies, but there is a lot of operational logistics stuff that is involved in organizing an event. And the funniest thing is when you work on a big trade show and you might be at the registration desk and somebody walks up to you that because you're wearing like, you know, some t-shirt from the organizer, they'll ask you a question like, what time does lunch open? Now, 9 out of 10 times, the people that are working on a registration desk or help desk or, you know, will struggle to answer a basic question like that. Because there is so much contextual information about an event that, well, the lunch depends on what type of bet you have and which lunch area you're going to. And, you know, like, so there's like so many kind of questions that are baked into that very simple question that is actually really, really hard to answer that successfully. And as a result, then that person has to go and ask somebody else, or and then there's three ways of operating, right? There is like, I don't know, could be one answer. There's like, well, let me point you to where you can find out. It's kind of like a second layer, right? Like you ask me, hey, when is lunch? Well, I don't know. Like, well, actually, if you go there, they'll know. And the third one is let me find out for you. So like you wait here, I'm going to walk over there. I'm going to ask somebody else. I'm going to come back and then I'm going to tell you. So there is the different levels of kind of customer experience. So like, you know, the best kind of term to think about somebody attending an event is maybe not a visitor, but it's actually a guest, similar to in the hospitality industry, right? And I think people love being treated well. And I think that there is a lot to be said for how can you really kind of create a much better experience for people using a system that is able to accumulate so much more knowledge than you could expect to be able to give out to all of the people that are working in events experience. And then even if you just have co-pilots that are used internally by your sales team, your marketing team, your operations, and so forth, and that is a 20-30% increase in productivity, that is incredible. Because if you're 20-30% competitive, or like, well, productive than the competition with your staff, that means that your profit margins will be higher and you will be able to pay people more. And if you can pay people more, you can hire better talent. And that means that anyone that is not investing in AI will either be forced to have second tier talent or will be forced to pay the price that you're paying without the profit, kind of like productivity increase, which means that profit margins will go down. So, you know, like there is kind of various different reasons that I think AI is a good investment, but mostly finding tools that are already baking it in than necessarily building your own.
Where do you actually see most activity happening? Is it what you just described or is it somewhere else that people are focused and not really looking at having a very simple use which will make a big impact?
So I'm definitely starting to see some organizers use some of those tools that come out of like Salesforce, CRM systems, customer service systems, like Intercom, Zendesk, like those kind of tools.
Right.
There's also many organizers that are using tools like Microsoft Copilot for sales teams. It's very good. There's like a lot of value in that in itself, how it helps you write better emails, like even if you can just be 5% more productive. Many organizers use note takers, like, you know, when I join a meeting now, there will always be like one of those AI note takers. We use those internally as well. They're super beneficial, in my opinion. So there are definitely, you know, enhancements that are actively being used, but they are more in the kind of business operations space than necessarily benefiting the participant experience. And I'd say that probably will continue for another year or so before we really see changes to the participant experience.
So if you project 5 years down, where do you see AI making a big difference, given the trajectory that you are able to see technically?
So I think that, well, so okay, so what are the change? Like, it's always interesting to think about the things that you think don't change, and then think about, like, you know, what will change. So I think that fundamentally interaction between people will still be incredibly important 5 years from now, and a core part of an event experience. But the way that that experience is created and is facilitated could be quite different. So, you know, the way that you maybe register for an event, the way that you come to prepare yourself for an event, the way that you then figure out who you should be having conversations with, the contextual information provided to you ahead of that conversation, the outcomes of that conversation and how those are being recorded, and therefore the overall sentiment about that event experience, are all parts of that event experience and that interaction that you have that I think will be fundamentally altered by technology. Let me just group it as technology. So that can go as far as the most fascinating question I think right now that is on my mind is, like, at what timeline does the badge go away? When will we no longer have event badges? And I've settled that the only moment that event badges will truly go away is when we have augmented reality that everybody is used to. Because once everybody is wearing glasses that is able to do, with permission and as part of the event experience, some kind of facial recognition that then shows you the details of that person right next to their head, the primary value of a badge goes away. So that's a very interesting, and that will fundamentally alter the whole event experience, right? Once we get to that point. So there are a couple of kind of fundamental technology layers that I think are kind of converging and over the coming years that will fundamentally alter how that interaction is established. But the value of being an event organizer, I don't think will go away as such.
Sure. So two questions I have for you. One is that, when did you sort of decide to become a platform, event tech platform? When did that decision come? Because I'm thinking that your beginning was with this Tinder / engagement or introduction idea. When did you think that you need to actually expand and make it into a full blown platform?
I felt very strongly quite early on that if we started working with event organizers, that we would be required to make sure that we were a facilitator of interactions at their events rather than being a captive of the data. Doug Emsley from Tarsus made the statement in, I think, 2021 or 2022 of the barbarians at the gate. Which was an interesting statement in the context of platforms that were basically saying, well, you can host your events on our platform, but we own the data, right? So we can then go and market other events to those people. We can, you know, you're now a user of this platform, and, you know, we can kind of take control of that user. I felt very strongly kind of way before that, in like 2017, 2018, that if we were going to partner with the biggest and best events in the world, that we were a facilitator, a platform, a facilitator of interactions on behalf of the organizer, and therefore the data should be continuously owned by the organizer. So I think you have to fundamentally kind of look at, what type of business are you? Are you a B2B, B2C business? And how do you view that? Yeah, I just felt that, like, in order to build a strong B2B kind of SaaS business, we had to be a useful piece of software for the organizer, and they were our primary customer. We see the organizer as our customer, and the participants and the exhibitors or companies, they are users of our solution, right? So it's a B2B2C model. So that's kind of the way that we view our technology and our business.
Right. And let's do one more look into the future, 5 years down the line. Where do you see Grip?
Oh, that's a great question. I think that the point that I made earlier about interaction is still at the core of the event experience. I think that we can do so much more about making sure that interaction is as seamlessly as possible. and I would hope that we can continue to lead in that. I also kind of foresee that as GRIP, we can do a lot more to help make sure that the right people are in the room. So how can, and that for me is a super interesting question, because the ROI of an event really comes down to who's present, because we can only connect you with who else is present.
Yeah.
And the more we can do to help make sure that the right people are present, the more powerful this is going to be. And I think that's an extremely interesting point, right? So how can we really help organizers maximize their audience makeup and understand which events to organize, where to organize them, when to organize them, for whom to organize them, what content to put on, which interaction models to use to maximize the return on investment from the people participating in it. Those are like really interesting questions that I hope that we can help organizers answer. And that's kind of, yeah, where I see the future of GRIP.
So that would sort of prompt possibly a consulting arm and not so much as a tech company, would you say?
Well, I think the blurs between technology and consulting actually starts with LLMs become increasingly thin, right? Like actually saw a stat the other day that most revenue of AI and LLMs have actually been made by consulting companies and not by the underlying technology companies. I think it's like several billion in consulting revenue, but are several hundred million in actual software revenue. So, you know, it's mainly so far been very profitable for consulting companies, the whole kind of AI space. But that, I think like that kind of trend or that kind of blurring of lines between the two of them will continue because, yeah, expertise and technology, I think, will become one more and more.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true for all major trends that all major trends. I mean, the same thing could be told about blockchain. It could be told for many other breakthrough innovations, let me put it that way, where consultants made more money than actually the companies were building the technology, because everybody had to understand what they need to do and they need to go to somebody who will tell them what to do with it. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit TradeshowEngage.com. That is TradeshowEngage.com. Anything you think we could touch upon which I sort of didn't provoke?
Well, I mean, you know, there's just so much happening in the events industry in terms of acquisitions, the way that we're looking at the value that the industry provides to exhibitors and visitors. So, you know, I think it's Oscar Wilde that said, like, or I don't know who said it, like, may you live in interesting times. You know, I definitely think that when you work in the events industry, then we definitely are. We're in interesting times. And so, it will be interesting to continue following it and continue shaping the future of it.
Tim, thank you so much for your time, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics, and strategies to leverage the first-party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a Bizcast original podcast and is produced for Pitchling, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.